It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, the right advice at the right time. You can call us and at that number, 800 number, or you can also reach us at our local numbers, 247-7282-353-4674. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Hope everybody's okay. What are we talking about today?
Ben, last week we talked about what sounds so very simple, but really is not simple, which is, you know, what do lawyers charge?
Mm-hmm.
How is the fee structure, if you will, set between a client and a lawyer? And we began to explain that there were really mostly three categories of fee structure. One is a set fee.
Right.
One is an hourly fee.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is a contingency fee. And then we went on to say that although these three most general categories exist, there are then, of course, combinations of these types of three fee arrangements.
Mm-hmm.
Where, for instance, yes, the case may be on a contingency, but the lawyer requires a X number of dollars up front as kind of a deposit.
Right.
Against the contingency fee.
Right.
Another permutation of these combinations is that there is an hourly rate,
mm-hmm.
but again, the client is required to make a deposit, retainer many times it is called,
mm-hmm.
so that the lawyer can bill against that deposit at an hourly rate.
Right.
And when that deposit is depleted, then, of course, based on the hourly rates that have been spent by the law firm,
mm-hmm.
then the client would be billed an additional deposit. So that is kind of a general introduction to this concept of attorney fees. Now, lawyers, this needs to be discussed with the client.
Mm-hmm.
The client needs to, and I encourage all of our listeners to ask lots of questions about the lawyer fees, the attorney fees,
mm-hmm.
the cost of a case. Try your best to completely understand this up front with your lawyer. There
right.
should be no hesitation on the part of the lawyer to be open and forthright about the way that these fees are charged so that you as the client completely understand all of the various factors that go into your case from a financial standpoint. Mm-hmm. This is an important conversation to have. Hopefully you are with a law firm where they bring it up. If you don't bring up the subject of attorney fees, the law firm will. We certainly do at our law firm.
Mm-hmm.
But if for some reason it is not brought up, then you need to bring this up because you as the client absolutely need to understand the way in which you are going to be charged. Better to know it now, up front, at the beginning, than to get involved in a file and then there be a breakdown in trust or communication with regard to something that it could have been discussed early on.
I know that last week, Wes, we also talked about parallel to fees is the costs.
Right.
And how that often people get confused about those things.
That's right. And I think that I ran out of time
mm-hmm.
right. at the end of the program.
So I'm getting to it now.
As I was going through that, I have plenty of time now. So, yeah, basically, you know, in lawyer speak, fees and cost, it's easy to differentiate between the two. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, the average person walking down the street maybe doesn't completely understand that, but it's a pretty basic concept in that, you know, the fees are going to be what the attorney earns for the work that's done on the file, you
right.
know, whether it's a flat fee or an hourly fee or a contingency fee. And then the costs are going to be the things that are necessary expenditures as we deal with whatever the legal matter is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that could be paying for, paying the court reporter for depositions. It
right.
could be paying the videographer who was necessary at depositions. It could be paying for expert witnesses. That could be, you know,
travel there with the
right.
witnesses, et cetera.
Right. Expert witnesses. We could, you know, be talking about a medical expert. We can be talking about a surveyor. We can be talking about an appraiser. You know, just the list goes on and on. an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all cost. So, you know, in the typical contingency situation, most contingency agreements that you see are a third. Sometimes you see 25%. Sometimes you see 40%, just depending on what the circumstances are. But in the typical contingency arrangement, you know, the way that works, let's say if we have a $100,000 recovery, then if it's $100,000 is the total amount that we recover and it's a one-third contingency agreement,
mm-hmm.
then the attorney fee on that is going to be that $33,333.33. One-third is right off the top. Then the next thing that we do is that we calculate all the costs that have not been paid by the client. Could be that there's some things that the law firm paid for as we went through the case and have not been paid yet.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that those costs are $5,000. Well, that comes right off of the 67% that the client receives. And then the remainder goes, you know, all to the client. So, you know, depending on the circumstances of a case, you know, the $33,000 can certainly sound like a lot. Mm-hmm. There's no question about that. But I can tell you, but normally those cases like that don't just drop from the sky. Normally the attorney has a lot of work to do mm-hmm. in order to get the case to that point. And you don't always, as, you know, an attorney know, certainly you really never know exactly what the response is going to be
right.
and how you're going to, where you're going to end up in a file. And there's always risks. And as I said last week, you know, a third of zero is zero, you know,
mm-hmm.
so there's a lot of risk with regard to that too. You know, when an attorney is making a decision as to whether they're going to get, handle a file on a contingency basis, well, there's a huge risk there because the attorney could end up doing hundreds of hours of work
mm-hmm.
and end up with a zero recovery. You know,
right.
you just don't know what the future holds with regard to that.
I think one of the things that we talked about last week also was to look into more of ways that people might mitigate their costs or their fees, might hold them down or might keep them in check.
Well, we actually, Ben, are always attempting to do that. Wes and I are the very first to say that that the profession of being a lawyer, that we lawyers,
mm-hmm.
you know, are hard to hire. It's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And the profession is almost out of touch, if you will, or off limits to many people, which is a shame.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there are some organizations that provide legal services on a pro bono basis. Yes, there are some government programs that allow for the payment of attorney fees. There are some charitable associations mm-hmm. that do the same. But by and large, you know, when lawyers are $200, $300, $400 an hour, a lot of folks just simply cannot afford that kind of charge.
Right.
And so we have to, in response to your question, we really do have to look for ways where we can mitigate these charges. As best as we can.
Mm-hmm.
And we do try to do that. If there's something that a client can do, if there's an errand that can be run, if there's a courier that they can go pick up, something of that nature, if there's research that they can do, if they can drive up to Onslow County or over to Beaufort County and get their deed, et cetera, something mm-hmm. of that nature, then we try our best to let the client do that. It also is very helpful from a practice pointer standpoint to involve the client. Now, Ben, there are a few permutations yet again to this subject matter, if you will, of what does a lawyer charge. In terms of, there are certain files like a commissioner
mm-hmm.
under a partition action,
right?
An executor under a will, a trustee under a trust, where the fees that an attorney charges are governed by the North Carolina statutes. Now, I hasten to say, and there's confusion about this, that this is really unusual. At our office, we are not usually the executor. We mm-hmm. are not usually the trustee. We many times can be asked to be that because maybe there are no children,
right,
or there is no heir in the family for the elder person, and they want their lawyer to be the executor.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the great exception to the rule, based on the number of files that we handle on a yearly basis.
Mm-hmm.
We handle many, many files where we just simply are representing the executor on an hourly rate.
Right.
Very, very different than being the executor, which is the great, great exception to the rule. But when a lawyer is the executor, or when they are the trustee, then the state of North Carolina has statutes that apply,
mm-hmm,
relative to the way in which the lawyer, being the executor, can charge. And an executor, according to the statutes, is allowed to submit to the clerk of court a petition for an executor's commission, which is not to exceed 5% of the value of the liquidity, if you will, or the assets that pass through the estate that are subject to the probate. Now, it excludes real property,
mm-hmm,
and it would also exclude things like life insurance, or an IRA, or an annuity, anything that passes outside the scope of
right.
the probate estate. But things that do pass through the probate estate, the executor is allowed to petition the clerk for an award of up to 5%.
Mm-hmm.
The clerk will then consider all of the facts and circumstances in the file, and will then award a commission to the executor. Now, this happens no matter who the executor happens to be. If
mm-hmm.
they're the son, the daughter, the cousin, the brother, also the lawyer.
Okay. Right.
And, of course, this is standard procedure. There's nothing really unusual about this. It's just the way that the statutes of North Carolina dictate how an executor is to be paid.
Okay.
Also, the same statutes are out there relative to a trustee,
mm-hmm,
and the same statutes are out there relative to a commissioner or a lawyer involved in a partitioning action.
Okay. We'll have more to come in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law. And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Your questions are welcome. You can call in right now.
Call me at 800-818-2255 or locally at 247-7282 or 353-4674.
And we're attempting to demystify that question, what do you charge?
Right. Well, that's correct. Now, Ben, like always, and I think you know me, I like the philosophical side of philosophy of law, if
mm-hmm.
you will. There are some good reasons why certain factors exist regard to attorney fees. Now, let's talk about what I mean by that. The law basically encourages folks to get good legal advice.
Mm-hmm.
The law does not want an estate to just linger on and on and on, and for proper land title to not be clear as a result of an estate,
mm-hmm,
for tax returns not to get filed, for creditors not to get paid. And therefore, the philosophy of law is that any charges made by a lawyer in an estate are, of course, off the top of the estate,
mm-hmm,
and they are governed and they are warranted, and they go right to the top as an administrative expense. And this is a good thing. Otherwise, folks might not hire lawyers or not have the money in the estate to hire a lawyer.
And you might not get it done.
And then it might not get done.
Yeah.
Another example of this is in the qualification of Medicaid. Again, lawyer fees are considered a legitimate
mm-hmm.
spend down expense. They are considered a legitimate off the top, if you will, expense, because again, we want folks to organize, to do what they can to provide appropriately for their loved one, and to be able to seek legal advice.
Mm-hmm.
Attorney fees in the area of settling any kind of Internal Revenue Service lien or Department of Revenue lien. There just are many, many places in the law where folks are encouraged to seek legal advice because there is the public policy argument that it will best resolve the issues. The same applies with regard to land title,
right,
petition to partitions and mm-hmm. things of that nature. The attorney fees many times are protected, if you will. They are a high class of category that would be paid out of the top because, again, this way this matter gets resolved.
Well,
gets
and
settled.
Speaking of the philosophy, I mean, that ties into the philosophy of land in North Carolina being at its highest and best use.
Highest and best use. Keep it productive. Keep the title clear.
Mm-hmm.
Keep the taxes paid.
Mm-hmm.
Keep the grandmama and the granddaddy, you know, in a healthy environment.
Yeah.
So that they are not, you know, in a home where family services has to go out and protect them in some way. So there are many times where the law comes in and puts the attorney fee cost, at the top of the chart.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why.
Right. And Wes, I know as you handle a lot of litigation, a lot of things that comes right to the top of that discussion is, where's my tipping point? At what
sure.
point am I litigating for more than it's worth?
We're always very careful about that and have a lot of conversation with clients about whether it's worth it to pursue a particular case. I mean, mm-hmm. if I'm on the defense side of the case, you don't really have much of a choice. You have mm-hmm. to defend the action. But if you're on the plaintiff side of the case, if it's a relatively small case, then it may not be worth it to pursue it because of the expense. We have that cost-benefit analysis conversation, you know, every day of the week with clients. We're mm-hmm. very careful about that. You know, the other thing that I would mention for those out there listening in the public is that, you know, when you engage an attorney, we would certainly recommend getting a written fee agreement. It's not necessarily required mm-hmm. by the North Carolina State Bar to have a written agreement unless you do have a contingency.
Right.
You can't have a contingency agreement that's a verbal
that's oral,
agreement.
That's oral, yes. As you mentioned that last week, you
right.
have to have it. I didn't know that.
Yeah, have to have it in writing. And you also have to have upon the disbursement of funds, you have to give an accounting of everything that came in and how the contingency percentage was applied, what costs were paid. You have mm-hmm. to provide all that in writing as well. So at any rate, a written fee agreement is something that, you know, those consumers out there hiring attorneys should ask for. You know, even after all this conversation and all this, the issues about bringing up this with the attorney and understanding how this goes, there's still
right.
sometimes conflicts with regard to attorney's fees between clients.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that clients out there, the public out there needs to know that the North Carolina State Bar does provide for fee dispute resolution.
Mm-hmm.
That is basically a mediation program that the State Bar provides in the event that there is a dispute with a client and an attorney about attorney's fees. It's pretty easy to get to. Basically, go to the North Carolina State Bar webpage and just search through
right,
it. You'll
right.
find it. There's a 1-800 number or an email address where you can submit your dispute
mm-hmm.
and then a little bit of paperwork to be done, and then that process starts. So that's available there because obviously the State Bar, which is attorneys governing attorneys,
mm-hmm.
you know, it wants to avoid as much as possible conflicts within the community, within the state, between attorneys and clients with regard to any type of issue. And especially, you know, attorney's fees, because that's kind of a hotbed. That's a mm-hmm. area where you may have more dispute than in other areas because it's just, in many cases, foreign to people.
Yes,
and that's
exactly.
one of the reasons we want to talk about it on the program.
All right. We'll have more to come in a moment here when we take a break here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240, as we're talking about what does it cost to hire a lawyer. We'll have more with Harville and Collins right after this. Hey, welcome back to Let's Talk Legal here on the Talk Station. And we only have a few minutes, but Wes, let's just address a little bit of the idea of asking for attorney's fees in your complaint.
Right. So in the litigation context, you normally, when you're filing a complaint, you're going to ask for recovery of attorney's fees. The general rule with regard to that pertaining to your typical claims like a breach of contract claim or negligence claim, something like that, is that you're not entitled to those. It's discretionary. The court can make a determination that you are, but the court almost never grants them unless there's a specific statute on mm-hmm. point that says you are, in fact, entitled to attorney's fees because of this particular statute. For example, unfair and deceptive trade practices is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
If you have an unfair and deceptive trade practices claim, which is we can go into one day, but it's for better to talk about the details of that for a different show, different program. Then in the event that you prevail on that, you're entitled to treble your damages, three times your damages, and recovery of your attorney's fees. Now mm-hmm. that statute, is directly on point with regard to that. There are various other statutes, such as, let's say that you have a promissory note you're suing on, and that promissory note does have language in it that allows for recovery of attorney's fees under the statute. That's capped at 15% of the outstanding mm-hmm. amount due, but you're entitled to recovery of those attorney's fees. So, again, the rule generally is you're not going to get those in the litigation context unless you have a specific statute that allows you to get them or a contract that allows right. you to get them that really kind of relates back to a statute.
Yeah, because
places where a contract is most prevalent then are landlord-tenant disputes, mm-hmm. sometimes have contracts about attorney fees, and separation agreements
mm-hmm.
After they're signed have provisions regarding attorney fees if the husband and or the wife or the ex-husband, ex-wife breach the agreement in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So there are places where there are contracts that do provide that the, quote, losing party has to pay the cost of the prevailing party, the attorney fees of the prevailing
right.
party. But this is unusual absent a contract in North Carolina.
Right. I think you see a lot of personal credit agreements have that in.
Oh, yeah. You'll see that. And that's that 15% limitation. Yep, that's right. Or arbitration. Lien statutes, that's another mm-hmm. one. In the event that there's a mechanics and materialman's liens and you, there's a 50% rule there, then again, I'm running out of time. I can feel it, Ben. But you can.
About 15 seconds.
15 seconds. But there's various statutes,
you know,
in which you would be entitled to recovery of those attorney's fees.
So those are the things that, again, that you ought to ask right up front. I mean, you ought to be asking, but many attorneys like you guys do, you talk about them right up front. Too.
We
so,
do,
oh my gosh,
absolutely.
Yes.
And it's very important that it be discussed and that the client understand fully mm-hmm. and completely the way in which the attorney will be charging.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Find out more by calling on the folks at Harvey Collins Attorneys at Law, again, at 726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City.